Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with my friend, Bethany Gilbert.
Hello.
And also with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdeo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down and talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, Instagram has a problem.
It does. We're going to get to that in a minute. How many of you around this table have the Instagram?
Yes.
I do.
I'm all in.
Chris?
Nope.
Chris is off. Mike, you're in?
Yeah. No. My wife does, though. So I live vicariously through her.
Define in.
Well, I just mean, do you have an Instagram account?
Yeah, yes.
Are you an Instagram user in the broadest possible sense of
yes.
that word?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Before we turned on the microphones, I looked back to see when my oldest Instagram post was. Mm-hmm. Answer, April 2012.
Yeah. That's a while.
That was before Instagram was purchased by Facebook. It was back when it was an independent startup that was kind of like kicking butt. It was cool.
It was awesome.
Brand new.
That was when you would post, like, it was cool for you to post like 8 times a day.
Yeah.
And you would just like, post what you were doing throughout the day.
Yeah.
And nobody really cared. And you didn't care if like,
and you only had like,
cool.
Yeah. You only had a few followers anyway because nobody had it yet.
Yeah.
You were like, what is this Instagram thing? I literally have probably not logged on to Instagram in years. I got on there recently just because my kids were on there. I was like, I want to see what they're putting on there. But I probably, it's been inactive for a long time for me. But
you have to like reset your password.
I literally thought like, I have not logged on here in so long. If it asked me for a password, thankfully I had the thumbprint thing set on my phone. So it just read, you know, used my Apple phone thumbprint thing.
What was your first post?
It was literally, here's my first post was a photograph of Ethan Burmeister making coffee.
Oh, wow.
It was that long ago. So,
Ethan probably introduced you to Instagram.
It's possible. I have not used Instagram significantly in a while, but what we're talking about today is the smoking gun that recently came out. Even as we record this podcast, there are hearings on Capitol Hill mm-hmm. today. The smoking gun is this. Internal Facebook company research that was leaked by a whistleblower shows that Facebook has known for years that its products have severe mental health effects among teenagers. And it has been suppressing that research and pretending like it doesn't exist. And so there are two, I'm concerned about this for two reasons. One, if you are a parent of a young person, this is a crucial topic for you to listen to. Second, if you're just a user of social media, this is really important for you to listen to and think about. Because I really think, you know, I know social media is relatively new and young, but I think this is sort of a big tobacco moment or a big oil moment for big tech. I think this is one of those moments where we're going to look back on and go, yeah, we kind of suspected that something like this was going on. And here's the research that shows they knew it. They have known it. They've not been doing anything about it. And I wonder if it's going to activate finally governments and parents and regulators to finally do something about the toxic effects of specifically Instagram. It's interesting how specific this research is to Instagram in particular, mainly because no one except your grandma actually uses Facebook. So that's not true. I know you all.
Well, that's wow. true.
I know
that's
you all true. Are on wow. Facebook, but you're only on there to like see when the high school reunion is, or like you know who got promoted at their job, or
yeah.
or to talk with grandma
who graduated high school that their grandma posted about stuff like that.
It's okay. These things change and shift. You're looking at me, Mike, with sort of like some like you're mad about me dogging on Facebook right now.
No, let's dog on everything.
All right,
is Twitter still cool?
Well, no, Twitter has degenerated into just like a yell fest. It's
okay.
not, it was never really cool. It's gone from useful to ranty.
Yeah. Twitter used to be fun.
Yeah.
And it's not anymore.
I bet they regret their decision to go up to 280 characters.
Oh, that was a good decision. I'm thankful for that decision.
So people be more ranty.
Maybe just because I'm long-winded.
And Threads.
All right, let's, here's the particular focus today is on Instagram and specifically on Instagram's effects on teenagers. The Wall Street Journal released a big feature article on September 14th, so a few weeks ago now, and that was sort of the revelation of this research. As I said, it comes from a whistleblower within Facebook who basically leaked to the Wall Street Journal a bunch of internal company communication and research studies that reveal some things. And so I'm going to read some sections from this Wall Street Journal article to just identify what some of the problems are. And then we're going to spend some time talking about it. Again, as we talk about on this podcast, we want to talk about how the gospel applies to the questions and issues of everyday life. We've done a number of podcasts on the Wednesday Conversation about tech, about social media, about how this relates to parenting and discipleship and formation, about why for Christians this needs to be a place where we are attentive to the ways this forms us and shapes us and misshapes us and deforms us. And so here is, you know, everybody's been saying recently with the COVID, follow the science. And so this is, here's the science.
Don't lie.
Here's the science on Instagram and its effect on teen girls. All right, the article starts this way. About a year ago, teenager Anastasia Vlasova started seeing a therapist. She had developed an eating disorder and had a clear idea of what led to it, her time on Instagram. She joined the platform at 13 and eventually was spending 3 hours a day entranced by the seemingly perfect lives and bodies of the fitness influencers who posted on the app. When I went on Instagram, all I saw were images of chiseled bodies, perfect abs, and women doing 100 burpees in 10 minutes, said Ms. Vlasova, now 18, who lives in Reston, Virginia. Around that time, researchers inside Instagram were studying this kind of experience and asking whether it was part of a broader phenomenon. Their findings confirmed some serious problems. Here's what's interesting to me about the research this article is going to quote, is most of it is self-reporting from teenagers. And here's why that's fascinating to me. Gene Twenge posted or wrote a book a number of years ago now on the effects of social media on teenagers. She is a psychologist at San Diego State University. I think we talked about that on this podcast one time. For a number of years, sort of like parental figures and academic researchers have been raising their hand and saying, there are some harmful effects here. I think especially when we're talking about like teen phenomenons, there's a tendency to go like, well, it's just parents being alarmist. It's just people who like, you know,
are overreacting
to what people are doing. Well, most of the research in this is teenagers themselves reporting about their experience of social media. And it's really fascinating what they themselves identify about its effect on them. So here's some of the stats. 32% of teen girls said that when they felt bad about their bodies, Instagram made them feel worse. The researchers said in a March 2020 slide presentation posted to Facebook's internal message board. So again, Facebook company executives are passing around these slides that say 32% of teenage girls say that when they feel bad about their bodies, Instagram made them feel worse. Another slide says, we make body image issues worse for 1 in 3 teen girls. That's from 2019. Among teens who reported suicidal thoughts, 13% of British users and 6% of American users traced the desire to kill themselves to Instagram. On average, teens in the U.S. spend 50% more time on Instagram than they do on Facebook. More than 40% of Instagram's users are 22 years old and younger. And about 22 million teens log onto Instagram in the U.S. each day. I don't know if now it's like been surpassed by the TikTok and the Snapchat, but Instagram's a big popular platform among teenage users. Here's some more stats. Angela Garda, director for the Eating Disorders Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital, estimates that Instagram and other social media apps play a role in the disorders of about half her patients. Okay, so that's sort of what the research shows. And here's the analysis in the Wall Street Journal identifies three things that seem to be the most harmful. Number one, the tendency to share only the best moments. Number two, a pressure to look perfect. And number three, an addictive product. So as they're sort of analyzing this research, those are the things they're identifying is, hey, people have a tendency to share only the best versions of themselves on Instagram. There's a pressure to look perfect because this is a photo-driven app with lots of filters. And of course, you're only going to post the best version of yourself. And so everybody else feels pressure to look perfect. And then three, this is an addictive product. And again, we've talked about that fact of social media, that the algorithms are designed to press you to spend more time on the app. So this is the quote I like. Instagram, the online equivalent of the high school cafeteria.
Oh, man.
That's a pretty good.
That's a terrifying.
It's a pretty good way of describing it, isn't it?
Everybody knows the cafeteria is so much fun.
Minus the bad chicken, you know? Yeah.
Teens regularly reported wanting to spend less time on Instagram, the presentations note, but they lacked the self-control to do so. So here's the perfect storm we have. Teens know it's bad for them. They would like to spend less time on it, but it's so addictive and so much of their social life revolves around it, they find it hard to disconnect from it. And so it's a perfect storm, especially for young girls and especially for those who are struggling with eating disorders, body image issues, all of this. Here's the here's the CEO of Instagram responding to this research, asked by the Wall Street Journal, hey, what do you have to say about this? We have to be honest and embrace that there's trade-offs here. It's not as simple as turning something off and thinking it gets better, because sometimes you can make things worse unintentionally. Lame
like
answer.
Your pocketbook?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It can't be as simple as don't use this, because that could cause other harms. I'm not sure it would, actually.
You don't have to stop smoking.
It does sound a lot like big tobacco, doesn't it? It's just like, well, I mean, we're not trying to directly market to kids. If their parents smoke and they find some cigarettes, I mean, it is what it is.
Which is interesting, because in 2016, employees were directed to focus on winning what they viewed as a race for teen users.
Yeah. So there's a clear profit motive here. And by the way, the way this all came out is that Instagram is exploring a version targeted toward kids 13 and under. And because they have been having the pedal down on that research, this whistleblower basically came forward and said, hey, can someone hold up the research we already have that shows how bad it is for 13 to 18-year-olds? And the bad news is they have not yet scuttled the planned version for 13 years and under, which is only going to make this problem worse.
Yeah, nor will
with younger kids. No, they will not, because there's a profit motive here. Now, the psychological features in play here, this is from childrenshealthdefense.org, and they're, again, reflecting on this Wall Street Journal article, there are two things happening in something like Instagram. One is what researchers call social comparison, which is just the high school cafeteria thing, right? It's the tendency that all of us had, especially at that really formative age of junior high and high school, to compare ourselves to our peers and like, what are they wearing? What are they doing? And where are they successful? How can I or can't I measure up to them? This is a real normal part of growing up. But you remember how powerful this is for each of us when you were at that age, right? And the way that Instagram accelerates and aggravates social comparison, because now I'm not just comparing myself to my small group of peers at my school, but to everybody else who follows me on Instagram, to celebrities, to whoever's posting anywhere, it just magnifies the problem of social comparison. And the second problem is objectification. The research here shows that for teen girls and increasingly for teen boys, when selfies have made this a bad deal, because when you're thinking about the fact that you're about to take a photo of yourself, the first thing you're asking is, how do I look? How am I going to look in this photo? And so it intensifies your tendency to ask yourself, not just, you know, how do I feel about myself, but how am I going to look to everybody who's going to see this? And so it has this tendency to objectify both self and others and lead to all kinds of shame about body image and about, do I look strong enough? Do I look fit enough? Do I look beautiful enough? And so these are the two things, social comparison and objectification and body image, that these studies show that for teens especially, this has a hugely toxic effect.
So one of the things that, as I was reading this and to the point of social comparison that came to mind, and this is still a little bit of a half-baked thought, but what occurred to me is you think about to what a degree you're shaped by your community, that in some ways social comparison is part of formation. Like you're in your community, you're learning who you are, you're learning virtues, vices. And so this is not to say social comparison is entirely a bad thing. In many ways, it can be a good formative thing. But that happens in an embodied community, and it's limited. So you're limited by the people that you're actually in community with as a person embodied. So whether it be family, church community, school community, the town you grew up in. But what Facebook does, what social media does, Instagram, is that it, in disembodying it, and as you pointed out, it amplifies it. And that amplification, there's like this disembodied. And so it's almost as if it puts us in touch with more than we can even handle. That the beautiful thing about the embodied community is that it also it's limited, because it's limited in scope, limited in number. And when you disembody it, it removes limitations and becomes so overwhelming, you can't sort that kind of information. And so there's plenty of implications there, but I think just what struck me is the importance of embodied community in this, because, and it's a limiting factor. I'd never thought about it that before in many ways of the beautiful formation that happens there, but there's this limiting aspect that it's restricted to who you're actually in community with. And when you remove that, it completely just overwhelms our system, and it becomes what something that could be a formative thing for good. When you disembody it, it becomes destructive.
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't thought about that till.
Yeah, I don't all the implications there, but man, and so in some ways you could say what is some of the remedy to this, if we're, you know, maybe jumping ahead in the conversation a bit, but a re-emphasis on embodied community.
That's beautiful. Okay, the research, by the way, these internal Facebook slide presentations, which were given over 18 months in 2019 and 20, came to the conclusion that some of these problems were specific to Instagram and not to social media more broadly. So this is not a social media thing. This is an Instagram-specific thing, especially when it comes to social comparison, because so much of what people are paying attention to is how people look and how they conduct themselves. And this Wall Street Journal article also gives you a ton of quotes from internal Facebook executives saying things like this: people use Instagram because it's a competition. That's the fun part. That's what the internal company employees are saying to the fact that your kids are comparing themselves to other people, and that someone's saying, hey, this might not be good. The people making the money are saying, well, that's why people use it, because it's a competition. So I think the concern here in two directions. One, for those who are parents or aunts, uncles, gospel community members, folks who care about the well-being of teenagers in our churches and in our lives, this is a huge, huge red flag. So if you're listening to this, this needs to be a major wake-up call, heads up for especially this particular product and how you think about the kids in your life and what you're guiding them to use and engage with when it comes to social media. The second direction I think this needs to affect is just our use of social media in general. For those of you listening to this podcast who maybe have your own Instagram account, I don't think this goes away when you turn 18. Now, hopefully the struggles maybe get a little bit more mature or a little bit more seasoned. But I don't think the problem of social comparison goes away, and I don't think even the problem of objectification goes away. One of the things we've said for years, Dusty, is one of the hard things as a pastor is being on social media and seeing what people post on Instagram and knowing, yeah, but that's not what's really going on in your life. Like, anybody who's in community knows with you, like, there's actually really difficult things going on. And what you're posting here is the cool moment at the park with the dog, which is great. That's a part of your life, but there's a lot more going on than just that snapshot. And so when we're constantly portraying to the world just only the beautiful moments, in addition to being disembodied, Chris, I think it's just disingenuous, because if you pulled up the stream of photos and just said, well, here's a snapshot of someone's life, the only snapshot you're getting is the best parts of that life. And that's not a helpful comparison for what it means to be human.
Or without unfairly hitting anybody's motives here, I think the negative side of life, when people show that, it's more performative than it is authentic. And so you get, it's just the same side of, it's the other side of the same coin of what you're saying, Bob, is I want to put something out there in a way that kind of is performative rather than authentic, because I'm not really interested in building community here. I'm projecting an image, and I want you to respond in a particular way.
And who's pulling their phone out in a tragic moment of,
they're in the middle of a fight with their wife.
It's not real.
Bad moment.
Me and my wife
are
having a fight right now. Snap. I just don't, that just doesn't happen. You're not really concerned about yourself when you're in the middle of those moments, those messy moments.
I'm still sitting over here thinking about what Chris said a moment ago about the embodied community part, because you're right. When a long time ago, the village kind of told me who I was, right? Like, if my dad was a farmer, I was a farmer, and I didn't have to worry about it. now, especially in the city and in the industrial age, now I got to figure out who I am. But I'm doing that online. And the Instagram way of that is also addictive. And there's a drug. One of the quotes in here was from one of the interviews. People talk about Instagram like it's a drug, but we can't study the active ingredient. So I'm already isolated, and now I'm addicted, and I still don't know who I am.
Yeah.
And one of the things while I was reading this was, I can't believe this is internal information, and it's the Wall Street Journal. Like, yeah, that should just be an indicator. If you're a Christian, you really got to pay attention.
Okay, so the senator running the hearings right now is Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut. He, as you might expect, is getting a lot of stonewalling and, you know, Facebook not wanting to show up and be honest. So here's what his office did. This was brilliant. Some staffer in Senator Blumenthal's office created a fake Instagram account. This is called a Finsta.
Finsta.
In the words of the teens. Is that right, Bethany?
That is, as a fellow teen. I was kidding.
Bethany, our resident expert on teens.
As a 19-year-old, that's what she says.
Bethany's closer to the young men and women of our church.
I am told that is what
she
it
works
means.
With our student ministry. So there's a Finsta and a Rinsta. Okay, the Finsta is your fake Instagram. The Rinsta is your real Instagram.
Man, I should. That just sounds like a lot of work.
Who is the person that actually started that word?
I don't know, but it's awesome.
I mean, like, hey, you've got to feel pretty proud of yourself.
They're probably not even getting royalties.
Probably not.
So Senator Blumenthal's office created a Finsta, a fake Instagram account, to pose as a 13-year-old girl as a way of just saying, hey, let's just try this out. Let's pretend we're a 13-year-old girl and see what happens. So what they did is, they started following easily findable accounts, public accounts, that have content related to dieting and disordered eating. So they just followed a bunch of those accounts. Within a day of creating those accounts, or creating this fake Instagram account, Instagram began feeding through its algorithm content promoting eating disorders to this fake 13-year-old girl. Which should make you really concerned as a parent that based on just your kid following some stuff, now the algorithm that could be feeding them stuff that's really detrimental to their mental health. And that's actually the profit. That's the whole way the thing is built. And so a spokesperson for Instagram did not immediately respond to requests for comments from the senator, because what are you going to say? Yeah, you know what? We'll have to work on that algorithm a little bit. It's real, live, actual research showing the exact effect that these company documents.
Yeah, and the answer to that is yes. Actually, we pay people who code for us lots of money to make sure that algorithm is happening.
Yeah.
Can you guys speak to the? I don't want to be hyperbolic here, but to the evil that it targets teenage girls. That's what the case of the article is making, but like, can we speak to that for a minute? Cause that's the most alarming thing. If it was just like addictive across the board, then like, okay, what isn't addictive to some degree? Watching TV is addictive. Watching sports is addictive, but this seems to be targeting teenage girls. That seems troubling to me. And that seems to be the thing that should be alarming parents.
Well, if we think about the book of Revelation, so think about the way the book of Revelation teaches us to see and understand the world, right? You've got the harlot, the beast, and the false prophet in Revelation. So you've got false religion, you've got worldly power, and you have the seduction of the world, consumerism, the culture around us. The reason they're targeting teen girls is because it's the next market share segment that they want to capture. I mean, the documents say real explicitly there's a race between Snapchat and Instagram to capture it's the same reason why advertisers always want the 18 to 24-year-old market, because it's like, well, the 30 and 40 and 50-year-olds have already kind of set in their ways. They know what clothes they like and what beverages they like. And, you know, the new people who are just deciding that are always the younger people. And so what you as a parent or as a Christian need to understand is these companies, which are wealthy, powerful institutions in our culture, have a profit motive. They're trying to generate more users and more revenue. And right now, the platform they want to reach is teenagers. And if you think about, I mean, just think about your own high school experience. Are boys competitive? Sure. But girls, especially when it comes to what am I wearing? What am I looking like? Who, like, they're, that's teen girls are very into image and how do I look and how am I perceived by people? Boys are too. But for boys, it tends to be more performance focused. It's like, am I a good athlete or am I good in class? It tends to be a lot about what they achieve. And again, for girls, men, it can be a lot about just how do I present myself and how do people respond to me? And so I think it's, you know, it's interesting that this article does tend to focus on the particular effect that this particular app, Instagram, has for girls who tend to be more visually oriented and more driven by image in certain ways than boys sometimes are. Although the article also says this is the same struggle is true for boys, but, yep. but for girls, especially as it connects to things like body image, seems to be significant. So I guess what I'm saying, Mike, is there's the simple answer is they're trying to make more money. And this is the market segment they're after. And if I were them, I mean, the reason they're not sharing this research is because it really is a smoking gun. It's like, if you're telling me the market segment I'm trying to reach right now, my product has really detrimental effects to that market segment. I have to choose between, well, do I not want to make that money? Or do I want to sort of push that research aside and say, yeah, but there's good reasons why we can't trust that and keep running after that market segment. And because a company that's motivated by profit is always going to make the second decision. They're always going to say, well, yeah, there's some problems with it. Just the same thing Big Tobacco did, right? It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, we have we marketed to kids? I mean, probably kind of, but, you know, can we pay you some money? Can we pay some money to look the other way?
Yeah. So if I can bring Marvel into this, a Marvel movie into this. Okay. So the new, there's this line in the new Black Widow movie where the bad guy, he says something to the effect of the only commodity the world is producing more of is like little girls. Mm-hmm. And so when you think of the commodification of girls and the market segment, it's a bottomless cash cow to kind of speak crassly about it. If you can get that market, you can make bank forever.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. And I think it's also, if you know, can kind of speak a little bit higher level here, it's interesting how every new sort of hell our world unleashes, who suffers most?
Yeah.
Typically girls and young girls. And this is another, I think another example, and again, not to speak, you know, overly harsh about Instagram and social media, but who, if you look at who is suffering the most in this new age, it is teen girls, young girls, and it has detrimental effects when they're older. And so what is that? I think it raises a lot of questions, gut check for the church in a lot of ways.
The other thing also here, just to have a dad pastor moment, is the other thing that happens around 13 for girls is that they develop and then dad doesn't know what to do. And so even in a good, healthy home, dad doesn't know what to do. So it's really important for dads to be engaging all the way through the teenage years. Well, all the way through forever. But if a girl doesn't know where she belongs and where she fits and if she fits and if she belongs, she will go somewhere to figure that out. And if we just give her a phone, well, now we've given her access to answering those questions.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so that's also why they're going to target that all day long.
Yeah, it's just a scary reality to think that anytime adults can make money off children, no matter what the industry is, that's a scary place to be. That we would just allow our kids to participate in that experiment.
Bethany, what are you thinking?
I mean, I got to be honest, when you sent this article over, I was like, this isn't surprising at all, because I feel like Instagram is still toxic for grown women. I'm sitting here as a 30-year-old woman feeling all of the same things, like still today. Maybe not in as heightened a manner as a teenage girl, but I even just like a little bit ago pulled up my popular page, and the very first thing was an Instagram reel for trying to lose weight. And I was like, see, it's like, it's still happening. But as I've been thinking about it and reading the article, I've been thinking a lot about what it calls women to, especially women who are mothers, whose daughters are watching them consume social media. Like, I don't want to sound alarmist, but I'm just like, they're watching you and how you consume social media. So
yeah.
The other thing that I think is just really interesting is I was trying to think like, okay, well, what drives my usage of Instagram? Because I use Instagram every single day. I would say it's my social media platform of choice. And the whole reason I got into it was because I was a photographer for a while and I loved the idea of just sharing photos with not a whole lot of thought behind it. Just like, I love photography. I'm going to post photos. And then it very quickly became a whole other thing. But when I think about like, okay, what would it look like for me to delete Instagram off my phone for a while? It's this fear of missing out that just is like, I'm like, I'm going to miss something. And then as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, what am I really going to miss? I'm going to miss a bunch of influencers telling me to buy their essential oils or something. I don't know. Like, it's really interesting as a woman to sit, who uses this regularly, to sit here and think about like, why do I use it? What motivates me? And then think about that with young teenage girls happening with them, but on a whole other level, I think is terrifying. Yeah.
I want to read an interesting quote from Children's Health Defense. They said recently researchers tried to combat the social comparison effect by reminding Instagram users that the posts were unrealistic. So they did this research study where I don't know if they had some text on it or something, but it's like, Bethany, remember, this is unreal. This is a highly edited, filtered image, right?
Surgeon General's warning.
It says, even in studies in which participants knew the photos they were shown on Instagram were retouched and reshaped, adolescent girls still felt worse about their bodies after viewing them. So the fact that we know, oh, this isn't real, doesn't change the effect. Like, that's what's fascinating to me is, I think there's a naive way of thinking about this. Is, well, if you just remind yourself that this is filtered and this isn't somebody's actual life, that will help you. Like, it doesn't help. It's simply the medium, the discipline of looking at people and looking at their photos and being barraged and bombarded with these images. It's that has this effect, particularly for adolescent girls. But I think you're right, Bethany. I think for all of us, just this effect of comparison and is my life as good as this person's and all of that stuff, whether it's related to body image or life circumstance or, man, you know, do I have as many followers and likes as this person does? All of that stuff plays in here. So what's fascinating about that is I think it says something that it's less about the psychology of are we reminding ourselves of what's true? And it's actually more about the practice of what is this very practice doing to us and doing to the people around us.
I think it's worth considering too, or at least asking our listeners, what are the ways you sort of talk yourself out of this stuff? We can read this article. We can sort of acknowledge the damage. We can look at the research. We can even look at our own lives. But there's always this, but that's not really what's happening. But here's all the benefits. Like, you know, and again, it's not necessarily an either or thing, but at the same time, we talk ourselves out of this in various ways to where we come to this place where we look at this and go, you know, probably not really a big deal. Like, functionally we do that. So I think one of the scary things about this is we read articles like this, you listen to a podcast like this, and you hear it and you're like, yeah. And then you functionally just dismiss and move on with your life. And I'd encourage people, why do you do that? Why are we so ready to dismiss rather than say,
I got some changes.
This warrants significant change.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is Chris just thinking he's better than me because he's not on Instagram.
That's
no. Oh, I'm kidding.
Well, no. To that point, though,
I want to take a photo of Chris and post it.
we don't want to. I mean, maybe that's one thing. I think it's far more than this, but maybe that's one thing. It's like, I don't want to be legalistic about things. You know, some of us grew up in the world. Don't watch rated R movies. Don't watch this TV. Don't do this. And so it can come across legalistic about social media. It's something. I don't know. You guys know I'm a 9 on the Enneagram. Give it up for 9s. We are nuanced. We don't like to be, but I kid you not. Sometimes I just want to say, your daughter is full of anxiety and she's struggling, but she's not legalistic. That's a win.
No.
Yeah, I mean, not that's, a win. That's kind of like what I want to say. Is that what we're after here? So again, forgive me if I'm being harsh, but at the same time, what are we doing? Why are we dismissing this and talking ourselves out of this as if this isn't actually a real thing?
Preach.
Let's go.
That's good. That's a good sermon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to brag on my daughter for a minute. She's 20.
Oh, I'll do that.
I didn't let her have Instagram until she graduated from high school. So I was like, hey, you're 18. You can legally vote and join the military. You can decide what apps you want now. So she got Instagram a couple years ago. She called me. This is maybe 3 weeks ago. It's like, hey, Dad, I got my friend here with me. I need you and her to set limits on this app. And I was like, cool, tell me why. She's like, well, I just realized I'm spending way too much time on it. And I was like, hey, I like that. Like, I'm impressed with that decision. But also, like, my daughter's a pretty wise, mature person. She's like, hey, if she in a year got to a place of like, I don't feel good about how much time I'm spending on this app, that I think speaks to the power of the app. Cause I would just say, like, that's, you know, like, she has a fair amount of wisdom and self control and she's a pretty mature person, you know? So it's what you're saying, Chris, of just like, hey, this thing is driving us. We're not driving it. It's driving us. And there's a need for every Christian and every Christian parent to have some sense of being able to say, okay, rather than just writing this off, it's like, well, I don't want to be legalistic. We need to go, no, what is this doing to us? And what do we need to do differently?
Yeah. We were holding our breath when our son turned, our son Landon turned 18 in July, and he's dating a girl. They decided together they're going to just try to go as long as they can without any social media.
Wow.
We were holding our breath like, oh geez, here we go. 18, you know? And so like, but that's, I think mature teenagers are seeing the effects.
Yeah.
Going, all of my friends are glued to their screen.
Yep.
And it's hard to be friends with those kinds of people.
Yeah.
Because we're embodied, but not really.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like everyone in Silicon Valley uses flip phones now. Maybe there'll be a movement among teens of, we're not going to use social media.
All the guys, I have a great story. I have a great story about that. I shared this article, and so we have a little internal team communication channel, and Bethany and Chris yesterday were like, man, this is so like discouraging. And then literally right after I read that from you guys, I went for a walk around my block, a walk down the street. There's a teenage kid that lives down the street. He's probably 15. He was sitting in the driveway talking on the phone.
Talking on the phone?
And it was a flip phone. I was impressed that he was talking. I was like, this kid's talking rather than texting. And it sounds like he's talking to a friend. And I looked at the phone. I was like, wait, this kid's talking on a flip phone. I have hope for America and the world all of a sudden. It was amazing. So amazing. I think that's where we need to head. But again, regardless of what the particular engagements or modifications you choose, I want you to heed what Chris said, which is like, let's not be the people who just go, oh, this is interesting to think about. Let's ask the question, what different practices, what different life-shaping rhythms does this require for us and for the people around us that we love?
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We always love to hear from you, the listeners, so send us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com, and we'll see you again next Wednesday for another Wednesday conversation.